Chapter 5. The rest of the current Rahway people began arriving after sundown. Loreen was the first of them. She had a job waitressing at the diner in Cranford and was temporarily staying in one of the small back rooms. She was at home when Ron parked his car and left for Minnesota. She was a combination of Italian and Irish ethnicity and was always internally in battle. She had long brown hair and an aquiline nose, crocodile teeth, and a luxurious mouth. They offered a slightly off-centered invitation. They'd kissed goodbye when he'd left for Minneapolis, but were so uncomfortable with the physical intimacy that they ended up laughing before their lips actually touched. They were less reluctant to hold each other when she saw him at the kitchen table. They hugged and continued to hold hands while they exchanged their regular questions and answers. It was Loreen who pulled away first. She was special to Ron, and there was a connection to Robin. They'd been born on the same day, in the same hospital. Loreen was all dark-haired and olive skin. They were a study in similarity of contrasts. "So what do you think about what's going on here?" Ron didn't know what she was talking about, and the expression on his face showed it right away. He shrugged. "What do you mean? Have you seen Warren and Chris together in the same room yet?" "Just for a second. They're very tense with each other." "Why?" "Warren told Chris that the drug stuff has to stop." "What do you mean?" "He really wants the whole thing stopped. The pot, the cocaine, the speed, the mescaline. But he'll settle for Chris to stop selling anything from here and for him to just keep small amounts of pot around for their private use." Loreen stopped talking and watched for Ron's reaction. He didn't say anything. He just continued to stare into her face with an intense expression. "Chris hates having anyone try to tell him what to do. And he knows how much Warren loves to control things. But Chris is out of hand. We have a rock and roll band that plays extremely loud, mediocre, blaring music here 3 or 4 nights a week. Sometimes they get too high to stand up. And Chris is dealing to all of them." "Out of here?" "Yes. And to make things worse, Joey Z got busted." "Where?" "He was dealing joints out of a rooming house on North Avenue." "Oh no," said Ron. "I like Joey, but that's so stupid. Why didn't he know that he could just get caught up with that kind of a situation?" "How much did they catch him with?" "Over a pound." "Oh shit, felony distribution." "Exactly." They paused. Their eyes exchanged a troubled look. "Warren doesn't want it around here anymore. He says that if this keeps up, Chris will never make it to law school." "What do you think will happen?" "Well, first Warren tried to get Chris into a discussion about it, but Chris really didn't want to have the conversation, so he just kept on changing the subject and throwing Warren off balance. Finally, Warren got really angry during dinner one night. It was just the three of us because Ruth had to work an odd shift. Warren started out trying to bring up the subject of the integrity of the law. Chris didn't bite, and Warren finally threw down his fork and said, 'What I've been trying to tell you for a long time now is that I hate having the drugs and the people that come with them around all the time.'" "And Chris got up and left," said Ron, with a note of understanding. "First, he just sat there, put his head back against the wall, shook it back and forth. Then he looked at Warren and me and said, "I'm not hungry anymore." Walked away from the table. Then what happened? They've been avoiding each other. What about dinners? Chris just hasn't been eating with anyone. He snacks all day long and either goes out or has his friends over when Warren wants to have dinners. So Warren's been spending more and more time in New York. But something's got to come to a head soon. "Are you going to be here for dinner tonight?" "Sure," said Lorraine. Her dark eyes flashed as she pulled her black hair away from her face. "I'm addicted to seeing anyone try to talk to Chris about something that he doesn't want to discuss." Ron heard a mixture of anger and satisfaction in her voice. She and Chris would probably still be together if it hadn't been for the abortion. Baggage like that wasn't easy to unload. Ron knew she was still in love with Chris, but it had been some time since it had been mentioned between them. Warren and Joyce came out of his room after she'd helped him change the sheets. He said goodbye to her at the front door, and she told him again about how much she was looking forward to being in his class again in the fall. She wasn't gone 15 minutes when Ruth arrived. Ruth was a tall, strikingly pretty woman who looked impeccably healthy. She came over to the kitchen table and kissed Ron on the cheek. "How are you feeling?" "I'm good," said Ron. Lorraine laughed with a mocking tone and said, "Yep, he's never been better." Ron smiled and put his head down. Ruth gave him a chiding expression, but didn't say anything. She went off to see Warren, and Lorraine went to take a shower. Ron wandered back into Chris's room. The mixed piles of clean and dirty clothes gave it a comfortable feel. Chris was playing his electric guitar without an amplifier. The TV news was set on the background. Ron said, "Do you feel like smoking a joint?" "Only if you roll it," said Chris. He continued to play soft blues riffs and stared at the TV screen. Ron glanced up Chris's tinted brown glasses and shoulder-length wavy hair. Chris always looked perfectly at ease. There was a picture of a rocket ship blasting off on its way to the first soft landing on Mars. The commentator was talking about how it was a great achievement and was bringing us one step closer to the stars. Ron and Chris were oblivious to the story. Religiously, they turned the news on daily and never reacted or spoke about anything they saw. Not anymore. "Lorraine's been telling me about Joey getting busted." Chris blew out a sigh. "I told him to stop dealing joints, but he knew better." "What's going to happen?" "He'll probably get a couple years probation." "Could he go to jail?" "I don't think so." "What about Warren?" said Ron. He lit a joint and handed it to Chris. Chris stopped playing and took a long toke. "You mean the sheriff?" "The sheriff?" Ron's grin broke all over his face. Chris giggled when he saw the amusement. "Lorraine says he's been giving you a hard time." "He's been trying," said Chris, giggling some more. "And what have you been doing?" "Well," they both laughed again, "what do you think about what he says about law school?" "What I think is that you have to be stupid to get caught. Nobody cares anymore. They aren't putting people in jail for what I'm doing. I don't intend to get caught anyway." "Did you tell Warren that?" "I shouldn't have to. He's been around long enough. I paid off both his and my dentist bills with pot. Didn't complain about that. He hasn't had to pay his rent on the New York crib in more than 2 years. And that doesn't seem to bother him much either. I'll just wait until his current campaign takes its course, and then I'll remind him of a few things. Are we all going to have dinner together tonight? Why not? You came back today, didn't you? They finished smoking the joint, and Chris said, "Did you bring your guitar in yet?" "Not yet." "Have you been playing?" "No." "Let's play." Preparations for dinner were very ritualistic. They usually began about 9:30. It had been difficult to find food that they all liked, and when they finally settled on a mutually acceptable meal, it never varied. London broil, green salad, French fries, mixed vegetables, supplemented by large amounts of Beaujolais. The repetitive nature of the menu reinforced the patterns of preparation. Warren and Ruth would begin by going into the kitchen, getting things out of the refrigerator. Ruth cooked the meat. Warren tended to the frozen French fries and the vegetables. Loreen made the salad, and Chris set the table and controlled the music. Ron smoked cigarettes and watched. When it was time for the meal, they lit candles and turned out the lights. Warren shifted the music over to his classical collection. Aqualung was exchanged for Brahms, and they gathered along three sides of an oval table, jammed into a space clearly designed to create a feeling of being close. As they were filling their plates, Warren noticed that Ron hadn't taken any meat and had limited himself to small portions of vegetables and salad. He took a long swallow of Beaujolais and asked if anyone had gotten the phone. Loreen got up and took it off the hook. On her way back to the table, she asked if Warren had heard from Art Collins. "We finally talked to each other. He's going to stay at the New York place for a couple more days. I'm going in tomorrow afternoon." He looked over at Ruth. "Will you be coming in tomorrow night?" "I've got to work so I can have Saturday and Sunday off." "Oh, so you're going to be able to do that then," said Warren. "Unless you've got other plans." "No. So you're actually going to be finished up on Friday afternoon?" "Yes." "Good," said Warren. "Art wants us to drive out to the airport to pick up Helga." "He's really going to marry this woman, isn't he?" said Loreen. "It seems that way." Ron was picking at his food slowly. Warren looked at his plate again. "Aren't you going to have any meat?" "I don't think so." "Did you eat already?" "I don't eat meat anymore." "Why?" "It makes me sick." "How can steak make you sick?" "I don't know. You should eat some." "I don't think I can." "That's not true," said Warren, looking over the top of his glasses. "You may decide not to have it, but you could eat it if you wanted to." Ron shifted in his chair and put his fork down on its plate. "It's not good for you." Chris put back his head and said, "Yeah, I don't feel like having any vegetables either. They're starting to do me in." "That's not what I'm talking about," said Warren. "Did you know that Susan became a vegetarian too?" said Loreen. "That's because she can't afford meat," said Warren. Loreen laughed. "That's also true." Susan, an old lover of Warren's, had become very close friends with Noreen. She was living in a cabin on some squatter's land down in Virginia. Since she'd broken up with Warren, she'd moved south. Her lovers had been strictly black men. So, Ron, everybody's really waiting to hear about Minnesota, said Lorraine. Ron looked at each one of them. Warren leaned back, Ruth leaned forward. Lorraine smiled. Chris got up to go change the record. I don't know what to say. Well, how's Robin doing? Said Ruth. She's fine. Is she working? She's got a job waitressing at a bar. Is she going to school? The University of Minnesota. She says that it's really different to go to a real school. Why did you leave? Said Warren. I was afraid that I wouldn't be strong enough if I didn't leave when I did. The silence that followed the answer was not what anyone would have expected Ron to say. It was too true and too complete, an admission of weakness and failure. Then the talk shifted to comments about the food. Ruth said that the steak was great. Chris took a second helping of salad. Lorraine lit a flame under the coffee, and Warren poured out more portions of Beaujolais. Lorraine said, the funniest thing happened at work today. There was this man at the counter who never tips anybody. And he put his sleeve in his soup. Pea soup. He's wearing a suit and a dress shirt with cufflinks. And he dunks it all in the soup. He sat there and realized what he'd done. I was watching him from the end of the counter. So was the short order cook. So he takes a napkin, tries to get it off, but it drips down onto his pants. Now he's angry and pushes the dish away, and it sloshes over onto his hand and burns him. So when he flinched, he banged his elbow on the counter. Then he looked all embarrassed and just left some money on the counter. Chris was laughing especially hard. He loved slapstick situations, and Lorraine had facial expressions and hard gestures that always got him started. Did he bang his knee on the way out, said Ron? No, that would have been too obvious, chirped Warren, doubling Chris over with an uncontrollable series of giggles that came out as a rapid-fire humphs. Ruth said, are you going to see the Calder exhibit on Saturday? Warren took another swallow of wine. Yes. What color was his suit? Chris was finally able to ask. Light tan and blue plaid. Lorraine paused until it seemed like she was finished. With a dark green border. The thing that we thought was really odd was that it was the first time that he tipped us. Chris immediately started humphing, and Ron caught the contagious giggle. Warren cast an appreciative glance at Chris and Lorraine as he watched Ron laugh and drink the rest of his glass of wine. Then they cleared the table, poured the coffee. Warren put the phone back on the hook. He was going to have to find a way to call Boston without doing it in front of Ruth. He was planning on calling Sarah before Ruth arrived, but Joyce had stayed longer than he figured. Chris was getting the milk out of the refrigerator, and Warren took the opportunity of having Chris standing next to him to say, "What are you thinking about?" in a way that he hoped would lead him to a little confusion about his intent. "Pea soup and mobile," said Chris, giggling, walking back to the table. He clapped Ron on the shoulder and said, I think it's just about time for another joint. I agree, said Ron. Chris walked back off into his room to get his pot. Warren said, how much of that stuff have you been smoking with him? Just a couple of joints, said Ron. Just a couple of joints among friends, Sheriff. Honest, Chris returned with his hand raised in an exaggerated position of an oath. I haven't done anything to ruin the boy's character more than it has been decimated already. Lorene and Ruth laughed and Warren smiled. Chris lit the joint and gave it to Ron. When's the next rock and roll dope fest gonna be? Said Warren. Chris raised his arm again and brought a giddy-up western drawl back into his voice. Honest, Sheriff, there hasn't been no rock and roll ever played in this house. We play nothing but Beethoven and Neil Diamond. The telephone rang. Lorene answered it and talked for a moment. She told Warren that Art wanted to talk to him. Warren went to the phone and said hello. Sarah said, I don't want to interrupt you, but I know she's there. But I thought you were going to call before. I tried, but I got tied up. Warren stretched the phone down the step that led to the back door and out onto the porch. Chris said, let's go back in my room and play guitars. Lorene moved into the living room and switched off the stereo. She picked up a book and settled in to read. Ruth finished clearing the table and went back into Warren's room to get undressed. She turned down the bed and smiled at the clean sheets. She always loved that about Warren. It was late when Ron headed into the back room opposite Lorene's to go to sleep. His voice was filled with songs and the sounds of the guitars. He looked in the bed. It was the first bed he'd had sex with Robin in. First bed and last bed, both at Rahway. He thought about all the beds in between. His mind was spinning him on a delightful journey of moans and sighs and images that had caused him to accept his body for the first time in so very long. He tried to write about the beds, but he couldn't. Heard the light thuds of the moths on the reading lamp and then the sizzle of completion when they got to the white hot bulb. He felt like his mind was taking photographs wherever it looked. He wrote, bugs stray in these rooms. Moths beat themselves against my reading lamp. The advancing shapes blend from a compository to a pureness, like grain in a magnified photograph, where time is place, and personalities call to the phantoms we've taken inside.